shit, I'm messing up already. Nothing?
I
recognize it.
I feel like it's right on the tip there.
Yeah.
No?
Did you get it?
I can't think of it. I know it, but I can't think of it.
Yeah, I'm kind of...
For real?
I'm drop the ball here.
All right. We'll come back.
Oh, man.
But at the end.
This bites me.
Trying to think of where I even heard that from.
Oh
recently.
My gosh, you've all heard it from several people. Anyways,
welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to Crossing the Line. It's called that because that's what Katie likes to do best.
Very good.
We have our first guest on tonight, Drew Schaefer from Albion.
Albion,
welcome.
Thank you.
Busted out the old bibs tonight so we'd match the Key Imperials. They're the key to success and everything you do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they look sharp. I like it.
It is what I'm known for.
There's a lot more room for activities down in the old ballroom, too.
I don't know. Am I right? I've never really understood why people like to wear them. What's so convenient about them? Because
they're comfortable.
But
they
it's are. More of an inconvenience.
Not at all.
Look at all these pockets.
Yeah.
Look at all these pockets again.
Pockets.
Yeah, but when you go to pee, don't you have to take them all off?
Nope.
No, you got a zipper.
Unless you get the button fly, but I wouldn't ever buy a button fly.
Hmm. They're just more comfortable, huh?
No, they are. I can bend over and I don't have to pull my pants up.
Right.
You know?
True. I wore these on my motorcycle more than one occasion. I think Danny and I wore
so
them
out. So your butt crack wouldn't show?
Exactly.
Got it. Nailed it.
Him and I are basically one and the same.
Mm-hmm. All right. I get it. So what do you do, Drew? Let's tell our audience why we are having you as a guest.
So my official title, I guess, would be funeral director and embalmer.
Okay, very cool.
Which I've been doing for almost 13 years now.
Awesome.
As licensed.
Or what's your business called?
I work for Levander Funeral Home, and we are, I guess you would say, based out of Albion.
Okay.
But we've got...
there's a location in Elgin,
mm-hmm,
for sure.
We've got an Elgin location, Newman Grove, St. Ed, Spalding. I think that's five. We got five physical locations and, you know, some of the towns in between. So we cover a pretty good little area.
Is there like a facility at each place or?
So do you got to travel to each one to do the embalming? Are you the only one?
No, I'm not the only one. There's myself and two others, Dee and Tony. We're all licensed embalmers and funeral directors, but we do all our prep work. So all the embalming and stuff all in Albion.
Okay.
So the other places are basically just like if we have a visitation there or meet with family or whatever, but all the prep work and stuff on the bodies is all in Albion.
Yep. Cool.
At our brand new facility that we just moved into.
Awesome. No ghosts haunting you there yet?
No. I don't do the whole spirit ghost thing.
Oh, come on.
Somebody asked me that recently. I don't remember who it was, but... No,
I'm all for it. I mean,
I suppose it'd be tough to be like that in a job.
Sure.
At a funeral home, wouldn't it? Or
I don't know. I don't think about it too much. I mean,
you probably
can't.
Yeah.
I do my thing.
What was your first embalming like?
You've got to remember it, kind of like everybody remembers.
My first, like, what I would say, well, yeah, two of them. The very first one I ever actually saw and like was there for. It was really neat because finally was like getting to see with my own eyes what I've like
been practicing.
Yeah. Well, read about and learned about. I mean, that was before I went to school and everything, but, and then I remember, my first solo embalming that I ever did on my own. And it was when I was in school and the funeral home I worked for then, in school down in Kansas City. They had the funeral home, and then like across the alley was the garage, crematory, prep room, all that. And it was on, I think it was like on like a Saturday or it was a weekend. And I remember the director saying, you know, call me, or, you know, because he was across the alley in the other building, you know, if you have any problems or anything at all. But I remember doing them. I don't remember, you know, I can't tell you who they were or anything like that. But
how does that work? You just hook a hose up to the one big toe and sucks it out the body all the way out through the other toe?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, filling up a tire. You just hook up the air chuck and hope it doesn't explode. No.
I was like, really?
I kind of believed you for a second.
I did too. I totally did. He was serious face too. I mean, he would have had me.
It's you know, it's a very technical process. It's basically, it's a surgical type procedure. I tell people it's typically not as gross or, you know, gory as I think what a lot of people.
I mean, think I have it is. I have so many questions. I can't wait to get into.
There's a lot of things that go into it, and experience is a big, big part of it.
Sure.
Run into stuff now all the time, you know, issues or what would be issues, complications, whatever, that now, you know, it's after doing it for years and years, it's no big deal.
Sure.
Whereas before it's like, oh,
what now?
Yeah. What do I do? I don't know what to do.
So aside or on the other side of being an embalmer funeral home director, you are also a volunteer EMT and fireman, correct?
Yep.
Okay. And I tell me if I'm wrong, but I think a little birdie told me you got like EMT of the year.
I did. I was
exciting.
That's awesome.
I was fortunate enough to get voted for, I guess you would say, for.
So does your
EMS
volunteer squad all like vote on that, or does the whole community vote?
No, it's just our department.
That's
so
awesome.
Hang on.
Very well.
I think that's the best I got for congratulatory buttons on here. I'm gonna have to work on that.
I was really, really honored. You know, that's not why I do it, of course. I mean, you know, it was really neat to get that award and everything, but I do it because I love to help people.
Sure.
And you know,
it's good for business.
Yeah. Well,
well, can we talk about that a little bit? Like, I mean, it is kind of like you go to an accident and either way, you're going to be there for one side or the other.
Yeah. There's been a lot of times over the years where, taking them, you know, for example, the hospital on one cot and taking them out of the hospital on a different cot.
So what do you do in that situation? Do you ride in the ambulance with the hospital or do you get a ride to your hearse?
Well,
switches hats at the door. And then.
I mean, yeah, right?
I had one last fall. It was kind of, that kind of fits your question, where we were paged to a residence for CPR in progress, and I responded on the call, even though I was on call that particular day for the funeral home. And we took care of the patient, transported him to the hospital. Unfortunately, they didn't make it. And you know, so I told the nurses. I said, "Well, I said I'm on call, so I'll just wait till you call." And I don't know what it was. Maybe half hour, 45 minutes later, they called. You know, when you're responding as like an EMT or whatever, obviously there's not, you know,
you already knew the outcome.
Well, that I mean, like I, you know, you're wearing whatever you're wearing,
right?
Right.
Then going back,
so and it was is kind there of, a dress code that you have so, to change into to go back?
Yeah, we when we respond to a death call from the funeral home, we, you know, we dress professionally. So, you know, we put on a shirt and tie and pants and stuff.
Wow. Yeah, I know Dee and Tony quite well.
Even during the middle of the night. You know, people ask all the time, you're like, you know, what happens if somebody dies in the middle of the night? Well, whoever's on call gets that phone call and they deal with it.
And get dressed. So, do you have, this might be a stupid question, but I used to work at the hospital and I was on call all the time and I had a time limit to get there within the time I was called. Is there such thing as that? Or is it just kind of when you get there?
Not really. Like, I mean, not for us necessarily. You know, that would be just like a company protocol thing, but we try to be, you know,
in a timely manner.
In a timely manner. Yeah, would be a good way of putting it.
Sure.
Especially if there's family there waiting, you know. Sure. And I hear the jokes all the time from people, you know, they say, well, what's the matter? They're dead. They're not going anywhere. I mean, yeah, kind of, but you got to think about if you're, you know, you're in that situation. Sure. If you're waiting for, you know, you want the...
Well, yeah, you don't want to linger around while they're laying there.
Right. And it's just, you know, what's 5 minutes to us might feel like an hour.
Absolutely. I agree.
To the family or whoever there is. There's not always family there at the place of death. It just, you know, every situation is different. Sometimes there's a whole slug of family and sometimes there's not any. But still, I mean, you know, we try to be fairly prompt.
Sure.
You know, and there, you have to have a certain amount of understanding, especially if it's, say, on like the weekend or, you know, you're not, might be doing your own thing. Mm-hmm. And so you have to stop what you're doing and stuff.
But, so how often do you have to take call or how often do you have to be on call?
We have a rotation between the three of us. We each have one day during the week. So Tuesday nights is Tony, Wednesdays D, and Thursday nights are myself. And then the weekends, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, rotates for whoever's on call. Like this coming weekend, I'm on call. And then there's somebody that's usually a backup.
Okay.
So basically, like a secondary on-call person. They're not the primary, but you know, if we have a service, they'll a lot of times help with the service. Or if... you know, let's say you're meeting with the family on the weekend and you have another death call and
like there's two at the same time.
Yeah.
Do you know, I don't know if this happens in Albion, but do they come in threes there as well?
So everybody says they come in threes.
I seem to hear.
I don't pay attention to that part so much as what I do notice is we might not have a service in a town.
Sure.
You know, St. Ed or Elgin or wherever for several months. And then we'll have one, and then there's usually several right after that.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this a little bit last weekend, and because Trevor and I dig the graves in Fullerton, and Clay and Jackson, we all do, but it seems like they always just come in threes. I know it's just like a weird thing. Sometimes there's four, you know, sometimes there's two, but it is.
Yeah. No, it does. It does. And it's one of those things that you kind of, We're steadily busy all the time.
Sure.
I mean, very, very seldom do we have, I think the longest we've ever gone without anything going on was like 2 weeks.
I mean, dare I say job security?
There's plenty of it.
Yeah. It's good business to be in.
Okay, so I have a question.
I have an answer.
Okay, when there is, let's say, a car accident, and when there is a dead on arrival call or something like that, and somebody is, you know, passed away already when you get there, do they move the body from there before you get it? Or do you have to go home, get the hearse and come back and get them from there?
Well, it depends on the situation. And I should point out that the only time we use our hearse is for funerals. So we have our.
Oh, what? There's a different vehicle to pick up? What? Yep.
So we have what we would refer to as our removal van.
The van. What can you tell me about this?
Just
van?
A minivan. It's just a regular minivan.
Then what's the coroner then?
The coroner is going to be
not to interrupt you.
Going to be like typically the county attorney, whatever county you're in, is typically the acting coroner.
Okay.
So they're going to investigate like an unattended death, like an accident or something like that. So. There's an accident. They, you know, release the body to the funeral. They say call the Vanders, whoever.
Mm-hmm.
In our area, it's typically the Vanders. And whoever's on call will come. So, like a lot of times, let's say if it's a vehicle accident, and I responded as firefighter EMT. And there's been several times where I wasn't on call for work. So, but I'd still stick around and
volunteer,
kind of, help. you know, let's say, for example, D's on call. I'll let her know, hey, this is what you can be working with. Kind of, there's always the thing about volunteer departments is people are on those departments because they want to be, because sure. they want help. And so they're typically willing to help with different things like an accident, you know, helping us get the body if it's down in the ditch or wherever.
So you do, like, they would not remove it from there. You would drive there with your van.
If they're declared deceased, you know, okay. which, you know, if there's a potential for life-saving measures or if they're transported or whatever to a hospital.
Sure.
And then they are pronounced dead there. Then we would, as the funeral home, go to the hospital or okay. wherever they, but if it's an obvious death, you know, they're obviously gone, you know, side of the road, down the cornfield, whatever.
Okay, here's where Katie crosses the line. what if, let's say it was that bad of an accident, there's like, they're not all together. What do you do then? Like, do you just pick every piece up and take it with you?
Yeah. I mean, as much as we can.
Does a crime scene investigator have to come in first and like take a bunch of pictures?
Not if there's a crime, probably not. If it was,
well,
like,
how do they know? I mean, sometimes you might not know.
There's always going to be, you know, law enforcement there, sheriff's deputy and stuff. The coroner will come. There's a lot of different situations that can come up. Typically, in our area where it's more rural, things are fairly straightforward. You don't have, you know, you don't have the whole CSI thing.
Sure,
I mean, I've
sure,
seen it, sure. I've seen it happen, but not very often. But yeah, if there's
like a limb missing or something,
yeah, disfigurements or stuff, you know.
I mean, you just pick it up and
put it on ice, and
we put them in a body bag, and
why would
and,
you put it on ice? You're not preserving it, Jacket.
What this if they're an organ donor?
They're not.
I'm an organ donor.
It's the common. It's what people say. Yeah.
Right, but you don't put it on ice.
No,
correct?
No. Unlike Jake's beer, we are not putting it on ice. No, we have a whole bunch of stuff that we take with us on calls like that because. A lot of times we don't always know what we're going to be dealing with 100%.
Do they give you a heads up before? Like, do they sometimes tell you this person rolled, they lost an arm or they were decapitated or, you know, something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, I mean, usually it's like, you know, the dispatch 911 center is usually who calls us. They may not have a whole lot of information other than, you know, we need you to go to this location. A lot of times I will, if I'm person taking that call, I'll try to, and I have no, you know, if I have no idea what's going on, a lot of times I'll try to get like phone number, or ask if I can make contact with the deputy or whoever is there that's kind of in charge.
Kind of get an kind of, idea of what
yeah,
you're
get
into.
An idea of what I'm working with, so I know what I need to bring. And we take a bunch of stuff with us. We have our cot, obviously. We have an old. You know, ambulance backboard, which
is handy. You still dress the same in that situation with your shirt and tie, or do you go in with?
Yeah, usually.
I got to do it again. How many shirts have you ruined from blood and everything else?
I tried not to think about those.
I told you this is where my brain goes. It's very dark.
Well, we, you know, there are times where we can wear like, coveralls or something like that. If it's going to be
the key brand.
Yeah actually. not like bib overalls, but you know, the coveralls. Sure. A lot of times we will do what we have to do, using help from whoever's there. It's, you know, just using a car accident scene as an example.
Yep.
There are times where, you get some blood on you or whatever, but
right.
Fortunately, that's part of it.
Sure.
So, but you know, we take a bunch of stuff with us because you never know for sure what you're going to need. Like, for example, we have a backboard that's really handy for if somebody's on the ground or whatever, having something that's easy to use.
So when you say we, you're on call, who goes with you?
Typically, probably about 95% of the time, just myself. Yeah, I mean, there are times where two of us will go, depending on the situation, but most of the time it's just, you know,
so one of us. How do you, let's say it's like a, I don't want to call it a typical death, but let's say it's a 99-year-old, you know, that died in his hospital bed in his own home. Mm-hmm. How do you by yourself move this body to your cot from his bed?
Well, a lot of times in those situations, there'll be like a hospice nurse or somebody there.
Okay. Does a family ever try to help you with that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And some, I mean, you know, we, you know, family's there. I'll ask them, you know, if you want to be present, you know, if you're ready, I'll have the nurse help me. We'll transfer them under a cot if you want to be there, you know, for that. Or, you know, or even if it's at a nursing home or whatever, you know, you can. Sometimes they want to help. Sometimes that's very meaningful or helpful for them.
Healing.
Kind of therapeutic. Healing.
Yeah. And other times they don't want to. So, you know, we give them the option. And basically what that process consists of is, if they're in, say, hospital bed, we'll take our sheet, just a regular white sheet. We'll wrap them up in it, basically kind of like almost like a cocoon.
Okay.
And then we have what's called a slide board. So it's just a thin plastic board, kind of shaped like a backboard.
Sure.
But we will put that underneath them. And then that allows us to basically slide them over real easily from the bed to our cot and so on. So that makes it a lot easier. Obviously, bigger people, you know, sometimes we need some help and stuff. Mm-hmm. Average size, normal size people, little old ladies or whatever, usually aren't a huge deal. We've had people that, I mean, they were big, big.
Right.
And, it's a process, but the biggest thing is us letting the nurses know what we need.
Sure.
And just in a matter of a few minutes, we get them onto our cot. I usually always try to ask if they have like glasses or dentures, because we'll take those things with us if they do, especially the dentures, because those are, you know, very helpful in
shaping
their mouth. Yeah.
That's my other part. Do you do the makeup for like women or for, do you put makeup on everyone?
So
you probably have to,
I don't know.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. It's not makeup in a sense of like what you would wear.
Sure.
It's cosmetics, makeup, whatever you want to call it, to basically help make that person look more lifelike.
So do you just ask for like a picture you want them to look like, and then you try to go off of that?
Yeah, if we can have a picture, that's very helpful, because we can see, you know, just little things, you know, what was normal for that person, you know, mm-hmm. did their bottom lip stick clear out, or they had a big upper lip, or, what was normal for that person? Because there's different things that you can do that, can make or break, you know, just as far as how a person's, we call them features, their eyes being closed, their mouth being closed. Okay.
So here I'm going to go into a dark thing again. I can't help it. I got to do it. So when you do have a really like really bad accident, let's say they're really cut up and bruised and stuff in the facial area, mm-hmm. but the parents really want an open casket. Like, has there ever been a time when you've actually said, no, we cannot do this?
There has, yeah. We try our best to do everything we can for it to be an open casket, or for to give that family viewing.
At least for the family viewing.
Yeah.
But has there been a situation where you've actually had to tell the family, we will not let you look at your son or your, you know?
There's been a couple of situations I can think of, both of which were suicides.
Okay.
So there was massive amounts of trauma to their face and head and stuff. And what we did was we embalmed and dressed them and everything just like we would normally. Sure. But we did what I would call like a head wrap. So basically,
like a hat.
Kind of almost like wrapping up like somebody like a mummy, wrapping their head and face with bandages and stuff, and then like Coban and stuff to basically kind of help recreate, you know, that normal shape, but
sure.
So that they don't have to see all that trauma. Because at the end of the day, there's some really amazing things that we can do. But there's only so much that we can do. Right. Recently had a family that their loved one passed away from suicide. But the spouse wanted to hold his hand one last time. So even though the casket was closed to the public and everything, we did open it a little bit just so that she could have a few minutes. Want to prepare them for kind of what they're going to be expected to see. But, that was a situation where we did everything just like we normally would. You know, we dressed them and everything, casketed them just like we would normally. The only difference was their face wasn't visible.
Okay.
And so, unfortunately there are bad situations, you know, unfortunate, tragic situations that come up, but we do the best that we can. And our job is to let families know what options they have.
I like that you said the options thing. So again, just going to keep getting deeper into my hole here, but
I love it. I love it. That's what I like doing about these things.
So you know my story. My husband drowned. Mm-hmm. Missing for 10 days in the river. And this is honestly something I've always wondered. They found him, you know, under the sand, had been in the river for that long. And I mean, obviously they didn't give me a choice. They just said, he's getting cremated. There's nothing you can do. And I want to know this personally for my own, like, I don't know, just curiosity, but what would a body look like after it's been in the water for 10 days?
There's so many variables. I can't, you know, tell you that this is exactly what it would be.
Sure. But,
I mean, I can say with quite a bit of confidence that there would be pretty advanced stages of decomposition just because of the body. You know, first of all, you've got that time period of 10 days or whatever that went on from death till recovery. The body's submerged in water. So we all know how, you know, we get if you sit in a pool or whatever for a long time. And usually there's a lot of, especially, you know, if it's like flood water and stuff, for example, there's a lot of bacteria, just gross things.
And this was right after the flood in 2019.
Probably a lot of stuff,
a lot of debris,
battering and beaten, you know, causing abrasions and stuff. But,
and, you know, whatever may be in that water. It's, you know, I can't say, yeah, this is what it would have been. This is what it's like. But
at that point, would there still be like a full body, or would it be like?
It's hard to say.
So much gone. I'm not trying to be too dark. I'm just curious about this. I've always wondered about it. And I wonder what our firefighters went through digging him out of the sand and what they saw and what they're probably scarred by today. Mm-hmm. I want like an idea of what.
It can be very traumatic, especially, you know, to people that are on, let's say like that, like a fire department.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can kind of expect you're going to have situations that are very traumatic from time to time.
Sure.
They're not always dealing with it every day, you know, like I am. But it still affects me in certain ways, just maybe not as much as other people. But it's hard to say, you know, for certain. I would say that things would have been in the way of
pretty far.
I mean, it's certainly not what, you know, we would say certainly not viewable.
Sure.
Now, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the story of Emmett Till from back in the 50s. He was, and they had a show or kind of a little mini series or something on TV in the last year or so. Anyway, he was this African-American boy down south. You know, this was in like the 50s that what happened was he was accused of like whistling at a white girl. Of course, you know, back down south and back in those days, that was
frowned upon.
Yeah. Even though I don't think that's actually what happened. But anyway, they some people got together and they took him and they killed him and threw him in a river. And it was, I don't remember days or how long, you know, how much time had gone by until they found him and recovered the body. But his mother insisted on having
seeing
him and having it be a open casket viewing.
No.
And so the whole point of what I'm getting at is why she did that was because she wanted people to physically see what they did to her son. And those are literally almost her exact words.
But having her see that would be, have goosebumps everywhere.
But she, you know, and they, you know, the funeral director or whoever, they, you know, they advised her, you know, we don't think you should. And she said, no, I want to see my son.
And she probably went on to like change a bunch of laws and stuff like
that. Yeah. I mean, it was just, and I think a lot of it was she wanted people to see with their own eyes what happened and, you know, the whole racial tension and stuff like that.
Which it probably needed to be seen.
Yeah.
It
was really interesting.
People should know more about.
So, you know, not a situation like that. Not good, but unfortunately, those are
part of
things
it.
That happen. So,
okay, so another one.
Hang on, this is just quick yes or no, not crossing the line. Let's say somebody comes in there and they have like a gold crown and it's not left in their will. Can you guys take that?
We do not. So,
people
once
put
in a
that
while,
in their will?
Well, once in a while, people.
I've heard that.
You know, they want to have all the gold or whatever in their teeth or whatever. We will not do that. I've never had a family actually do it, but
like request you to pull it out for
them? Yeah. But if they were insistent upon it, and this is absolutely what we're going to do, we tell them, okay, you can do that because you have the authority. I mean, you're the next of kin. You're in charge.
Mm-hmm.
We will not do that. So you're going to have to go and find a dentist or somebody and hire a dentist that's going
to
be willing to do
yourself.
It. So a lot of times that usually eliminates that because
they don't want to do it either.
Where are we going to? Yeah.
I just something I heard, so I had to bring it up.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So my question is, after you would find... Have you ever had to go through like a drowning victim like that where you don't find them for how many days after?
Yes, I think. Well, trying to think. In my time, we've had a few drowning victims, but I think they were recovered, you know.
Pretty quickly.
Fairly soon.
Okay. Well, my question was, how do you deal with the smell of that? And the only reason I even knew that is because... When Brett was found, he still had his shorts on and he still had his phone in his pocket and they gave us back his phone. Still had his dirt bike sticker on it and everything, but like the sheriff that gave it to us specifically handed it to my best friend and said, you need to go like decontaminate this right now because it smells really, really awful. And I can still smell what it smelled like.
Yeah. There's a lot of different things that company situation like that. Obviously, even if they're not viewable and, for example, the body, you know, family's going to have the body buried, we still have to embalm the body. Now, we might not be able to do it by our normal traditional
methods
of doing that.
Do that even?
A lot of times, sometimes if they're you know, if they're too far gone or if they've, you know, they've been gone for quite a while, sometimes it's just a matter of what we would call topically embalm. So basically pouring embalming fluids and stuff like into the body bag onto them.
Oh.
Because
is that just like formaldehyde or something?
Yeah. Yeah. So the embalming fluid is, it's, formaldehyde is like one of the typically the main preservative ingredients.
Sure.
In a fluid. There's a lot of other various different things, but formaldehyde is what is the main thing that's doing the preservative action. So, on a quote unquote normal body, somebody that, 85-year-old grandma passes away at the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
When we embalm, we're using the circulatory system in your body to distribute those chemicals. So we're injecting chemicals into an artery.
Just smash into the old left atrium or whatever. And
yeah, so we'll do is...
boil it out the big toe there.
Heart shot.
Yeah. We don't, you know, it's not like people, you hear people say, well, you just, you know, bleed them out or whatever. What actually happens is we'll make an incision, a surgical incision.
Where?
Typically on your collarbone area.
Probably get more flow quicker that way, huh?
So your carotid artery, which is one of your main arteries that delivers or supplies blood to your head. We'll make that incision. So when you feel your pulse in your neck, you're feeling your carotid artery.
Sure.
And so we'll make an incision. We'll dissect the tissue, separate it out, and then we'll what we call raise the vessels to the surface, which is basically just that. We're dissecting all that tissue and we're bringing that artery and the vein that accompanies it. So in this case, your carotid artery and your jugular vein, we're basically raising them to the surface through a surgical type incision that's, you know, maybe a couple inches long or so.
Inches. It's on their neck?
Yeah. Usually I do it like right on the collarbone area.
So what if I die and I request to be buried in a tube top?
Well.
What are you going to do?
We can try to cover that up as best we can.
Put a nice scarf on you.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, you know, yeah. That'd be a good scarf look for or you. Something?
Would it? Okay.
Just drape Jake's mustache.
Yeah. Yeah. A little extra. Interesting.
There are other sites that we can use for an injection point. The carotid in your neck is typically our primary. Because
carotid is where you drain them and refill them, though.
So the carotid is the name of that particular artery.
Right.
We're injecting the fluid into the artery. And then the drainage that comes out is coming out of the vein. So it's basically...
But it's all coming from the same place, like in your neck.
Yeah. Roughly. Yep.
So it's like one's going in, the other one's coming out.
Yeah. So you have a tube that's connected to your embalming machine and you insert that
like
into...
dialysis in a way? Like,
yeah, I mean, kind of. You know, it's other than you're pushing fluid in. So it's like if you take a glass... and you fill that glass full and then you just keep filling it, you know, it only holds so much. Eventually stuff's going to overflow. It's basically what's happening is
so
we're injecting fluid in and it's forcing fluid back out.
All right. This is the only way I can put this analogy in my head. Is it kind of like when I'm winterizing my camper and I'm putting in antifreeze and we just basically have to wait until we see antifreeze coming back out.
That's exactly.
To know it's all done.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a fair analogy.
I would agree.
The consistencies of the embalming fluid are probably a lot different than the blood and everything else coming out. Maybe that they kind of stay separated.
When it starts, you're going to have, typically if it's going well, you're going to have, you know, the dark blood and stuff kind of coming first. Basically, over the process, that fluid and the blood is going to intermix. So as you get kind of towards the end, you know, that you can kind of tell that it's more of the color of the fluid that you're injecting.
Which, what color is that?
It's typically, it's going to vary, but anywhere from kind of a orangish Kool-Aid color.
Okay.
you know, there's a little bit of dye in there that kind of helps give the
I hope not red dye. Skin, I'm scared of that now.
No. it helps just kind of recreate the natural glow that we have when we're living.
Interesting.
Because the appearance that we have, like right now, that warm, you know, that your skin tone, a lot of that is from your blood circulating through your body right now, which it stops obviously when you pass away. So, you know, people, they have that, they look dead, you know, just that death color.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when we're done doing what we do, they have a much more lifelike appearance, lifelike color. That serves a couple of different purposes. One of them being to make them look more lifelike. Another, you know, I can watch or see those visual changes of the body as I'm embalming it. And that is telling me this fluid is going where I need it to go, you know, throughout the body, or this leg isn't getting the fluid very much. So we might have to do something different there.
Would having bad arteries affect how well that circulates through the body?
Yeah. I mean, there's times where, you know, there's people that have arteries, you know, let's say you're not getting that fluid down into that person's, they have the right leg isn't embalming very good. The rest of the body, you can tell it's getting that fluid fine. Things going well, but it's just not distributing through that leg or whatever. So what we can do is raise another vessel, you know, like in that leg. So like we do like your femoral artery.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, yeah, you raise that. It's just like a pencil, you know, it's just hard and stuff. It's got a lot of sclerosis in it, you know, from eating McDonald's your whole life or whatever. Yeah. So
on Mickey D's.
I feel bad for whoever has to do me because
watch Super Size Me.
I did watch it, but I can't lie. I still love McDonald's.
I'm with her. Yeah.
I do. My kids will only
eat
McDonald's.
A lot of wild game though too, don't you?
Oh yeah. Yep.
So that kind of balances it out, I think.
I wouldn't call me a specimen of health, but I wake up every day.
Yeah.
So. But the condition of your vessels does play a big part of it. You know, you have some people that, they've lived a rough life. And
I mean, typically, how long does that process take to do the embalming?
Well, on average, from basically start to finish, a couple hours. Anywhere from hour and a half to 2 hours. And it depends on, you know, if things went well, you don't have complications. You know, just, you know, like I'm a slower embalmer than like my counterpart D. She'll do the same exact thing. And
she's
maybe
a woman and she'll do it in half the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Had to throw that in there. Sorry. Prioritization.
Yeah. I wouldn't disagree with that.
That's what she said.
I've been waiting for that one.
We're going to take a quick break here. Have a short word from our sponsors. And we are back. We don't have any sponsors, so that's
why
you're
here. If you want to sponsor us, go ahead and reach out.
It was a quick word.
Yep. It was a quick one. So
this podcast brought to you by Key Imperial, the aristocrat of overalls.
See, no, because they're not going to pay us. They're not going to pay us.
We're wearing their product. They should. I mean, at least send us a pair of bibs or something.
Right?
I got to ask you quick before Katie turns it back dark again. you got that photo with the deer that you shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't figure out what kind of gun that was. Was it a shotgun?
Let me look here.
I was just really struggling, and then the sight on the end of the muzzle kind of threw me off, but I thought maybe if he had to put on a rifled barrel for a slug on a shotgun, then maybe it would have a front sight.
No, that is one of my Remington 760 pump actions.
Wow.
Pump action fanatic.
Hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think they're awesome. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
Not familiar with the pump action rifles. That's what she said.
That's what she said.
It never gets old.
It doesn't. But that is what she just said.
Right.
No, actually, I have like my grandpa's pump action, which is the same rifle, just different one. I haven't hunted with that one for a couple of years because I've been using some of my other rifles. But yeah, they're my favorite.
Okay. Am I permission to go dark?
Yeah.
Okay. What happens to their bowels? Always wondered that. I've always heard horror stories, but I never knew it was true or not.
Well,
or what do you got to do something.
So we treat it. You know, there's basically two, and I'll lay it all out there if you guys want to know.
Please do. It's crossing the line.
There's
what we're about.
There is basically two types of embalming that occur. There's the arterial, which mm-hmm. I talked about a little bit ago, mm-hmm. and then there's the cavity embalming. So that is basically where we take it's called a trocar. It's basically a giant needle and aspirate the excess fluids and stuff from your internal organs and stuff out. So, you know, like your hollow organs, like your stomach, your bowels and stuff, remove the gases, the fluids, whatever's in there. Some people, there's a lot of stuff. Some people, there's not hardly any. Basically aspirate that out, or, you know, suction it out, and then replace it with what we call cavity fluid, which is a much stronger preservative fluid than what we're injecting into you when we're doing the arterial portion. Mm-hmm. So that is designed to treat, you know, the parts of your body, like your internal organs that aren't necessarily treated by the arterial injection. As well as, you know, in our intestines and stuff, we have bacteria that help us digest. Well, they're helpful for us while we're alive, but once you pass away, they will, I guess, for lack of a better term, turn against you.
Okay.
Like decaying and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they're feeding off of the food that we're eating because they're helping us digest it. And when you pass away, they don't have any other nutrients. So that's where that decomposition.
I had never thought about that before.
I have.
You know, you see, you know, let's say, for example, you know, a cow that dies, you know, bloated.
It bloats.
Yeah. That's that gas that's being created from basically that process. So we don't want that to happen because that's a very bad thing.
Right.
So that's why we treat it with the chemicals.
Which, so then it doesn't come out?
So it preserves, so it stops like the gas and stuff. You know, it's basically killing all that bacteria. Like a bowel movement, fecal mm-hmm. matter and stuff. Sometimes there will be some of that will come out. Not always. You know, the thing that is occurring is, you know, like while we're sitting here right now, you're using muscles basically involuntarily to
not fart on the show.
Yeah, not fart, not soil yourself.
I'm gonna have to get that button.
Yeah. When you pass away, sometimes those muscles will relax.
Right.
Sometimes there is some excrement that comes out. Not always, but it does happen from time to time. Clean it up as best we can. You know, there's different methods we can do to kind of prevent that from occurring further.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Do you like stuff something in there? Or?
Sometimes if we need to, sometimes we can
block it.
Pack those orifices full of like cotton and stuff to help stop.
Like a man pond.
Mm-hmm. tampons actually are surprisingly very helpful.
For I can see that. Wrestlers stick them up their nose.
Different things. Yeah. Sometimes even putting that person in a disposable underwear, adult diaper, whatever you want to call
it. Depends.
Yeah. It depends.
You should sponsor us too.
It depends on the situation.
Got it. So, oh man, my mind's going a million ways right now.
Spit it out.
I can't if I'm dead.
You're done. You're done, patty cake head ass.
Yeah. I still am bothered that that voice sounds a lot like mine.
Were those like pre-programmed or did you?
No,
like,
I had to learn about all this and then put them on there, and is a learning curve.
Yeah, on to Jake to
kind of figured out. The ones they had on there were pretty lame, and so I just changed them all.
Yeah. Okay, another. Thank you for that.
That's another good one.
Another question. I think I've heard rumors about it, and I've never known if it was true. So I'm just going to ask: do you remove their eyes?
That is a good one. I don't think I've ever been asked that before.
That is a good one.
No, we do not. There are situations where a person's eyes may be removed, or the official fancy term is enucleated.
Okay.
That would be in a case of like a organ or tissue donor, where somebody's like corneas or different parts of their eyes are removed for donation.
So you know how to do that? Like,
I do not do that. Okay. There are some funeral directors that are trained as...
I was going to say, how would you know what to not cut?
Yeah. So there are some that are trained that they do it. I have no interest or desire in that.
Because the eyes are the gateway to the soul. Is that why?
Well...
That's what people say.
Mine is through my stomach, but...
okay. When I was in high school, quick little bird walk, we had to dissect a cow eye.
Yeah, we did too.
I didn't do it. I walked out of the classroom and my teacher came after me. She's like, get in here, because she thought I was all tough and stuff. And I'm like,
you do look like you weren't into that. You weren't all about that.
Not the eye. I couldn't deal with the eye. I just, it's, I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this thing is watching me and I'm going to cut its eye open.
Yeah. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And then when she figured out that I was serious, then she just kind of let me slide on that one. But she did make me go to a cadaver.
Like a human cadaver?
Yep.
Really?
What? Oh yeah. Wow. Briar Cliff.
High school?
Oh yeah.
What?
Anatomy and physiology.
Wow. Oh, I didn't even get that.
Me neither. I would have loved that.
Oh, I know. Well, I think she went to college there. I didn't like it. I didn't want to go, but it wasn't near as bad as I thought it was going to be. You know,
I'd be all about that.
Like you had to, there's those tendons behind your knee and stuff.
Yeah.
We could pull on those and his toes would curl up. It was like this guy was like 7 years old, donated his body to science. And
me and my sisters did that with my dad's deer legs. We'd like grab his pliers and pull the thing to make the deer leg move all the time.
Sickos.
I'm not the only one that does stuff like
that. No, it's weird, but whatever.
I'm just a normal person.
So, you can carry on. Yeah, I just had to get that out of my system. With that, though,
I also heard there's a way you have to, like, how do you get their eyelids to stay shut?
Oh. So, yeah. So I'm going to piggyback on your first question. So we don't remove their eyes or anything, but if somebody went through the donation process and that was done, basically we recreate kind of the shape of their eye, because once their eye's been enucleated, yeah, there's basically, you know, their eyelids and everything are still there, but there's nothing there.
Right.
And it's very, I've actually
like
only
cave in.
Yeah, well, it's just the whole eyeball is just
like
gone.
Not having dentures. Your mouth would cave.
I've heard they put this thing, like a little plastic thing in there with like kind of rigid triangle angles to hold your eyelid shut.
Yeah, it kind of depends on what's
needed. And kind of keep the shape of an eyeball.
Yeah, sometimes like a little little ball to kind of give you your base, and then what you're referring to is what we call an eye cap, so that kind of helps give
at least the eyes. What you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
So that would be what we'd have to do if we had to recreate, you know, that whole missing eyeball. For somebody that doesn't have that, you know, their eyes are still there. We don't sew their eyes shut or anything. Mm-hmm. We close the eyes, which is basically just, we'll put a little tiny little piece of cotton underneath the eyelids, and then we'll basically just fold the eyelids, you know, the upper one over top of, just so it doesn't meet, but it just goes just a little bit over top of the lower one.
Mm-hmm. Tack it somehow? Or?
No, then it just kind of holds itself in place.
Okay.
And then, you know, when you embalm somebody, what's happening is that formaldehyde, which is your main ingredient, your main preservative, reacts with the proteins in your body and causes firmness.
Is the formaldehyde the same stuff as what they use at the cadavers for the cadavers?
Well, yeah. But what they would use for preserving somebody for anatomical donation, you know, donating your body to science like that is, it's along the same lines as like what we're doing for preservation for funeral, but it's a lot more extreme because they need that body to be preserved for years. Whereas when we're preserving,
they keep them for years.
It depends. You know,
I just figured it was like a 1 month deal and then you're done.
It depends on what they're using the body for and what, you know, how much demand and stuff there is. But yeah, typically anywhere from a year to 2 years, a little bit less, sometimes longer.
So
that's what you can usually expect.
Here comes another question just from our conversation tonight. What if you go to pick up somebody from an accident scene and you go and you start to go embalm them and then you have someone run in the funeral home and say, this guy wants his body for science?
That's all documented probably before.
How did you know necessarily? Well, what if you didn't know who it was?
My driver's license.
They would make, you know, the authorities, the cops, whoever, you know, they would have to make identification of that person.
It's all on a database.
Yeah. So to donate your body to science, that has to actually be, all that paperwork has to be in place. You know, let's say you donate your body to the medical center in Omaha, University of Nebraska. That all has to be in place and approved while you're still alive. So like, let's say Grandpa Bob passes away tonight and his family can't say, well, we want to donate him to science. Well, too late now.
Yeah. Legally, you can't.
You have to have, you know, in order to deed your body, you have to have all that paperwork in place. It's basically just filling out the information that the universities require, and then they decide if they accept that person or not.
I mean, because they couldn't technically have a funeral because you can't.
No, you can. You can.
Without embalming?
Well, not without embalming, but you could have a funeral and then the person's body is donated to science or taken to the medical schools. It just depends on what the family wants to do. Some families, they say, no, just take that person, you know, from the place of death down to the university right away. Other families say, no, we want to have a funeral first and then take their body. So,
okay. Another question.
We still embalm them though.
Is there ever a case where you wouldn't embalm them?
So embalming is, and I'm going to get technical here, but I'm kind of a technical nerd. Embalming is not required by law, except in certain situations. So anytime you go to a visitation or viewing and you see the body there in a casket, that body would have been embalmed because in Nebraska, and I speak only for the state of Nebraska. Mm-hmm. I can't speak for other states because I'm not licensed in them. But in Nebraska, maybe that was my truck at first.
No, you're good.
In Nebraska, embalming is required when there's like a public visitation or viewing for the health and safety of the general public, so that body isn't spreading disease or causing other issues. So situations that embalming would not be required is if disposition was to occur within 24 hours from the time of death. So like immediate burial or immediate cremation, or if the body has been refrigerated, you can refrigerate in Nebraska. I think they bumped it up to like 96 hours. Ooh, now.
That was going
to
be my next question. How long you could wait to have an actual funeral before it was considered like not okay.
So you can refrigerate the body up to 96 hours.
They'd be embalmed before that though.
Well, not necessarily. That's unembalmed. They're just refrigerated, so they're not frozen.
And for someone at math, how many days is 96 hours?
That would be four. Okay. It used to be 72. Now they changed it to 96, so days.
4 days.
You could have a closed casket funeral, and the body technically wouldn't have to be embalmed.
But at what stage would it start smelling?
I would say average, probably maybe start noticing some things within a couple of days, probably. I mean, there's always, again, there's just so many variables, both internally and
elements,
externally.
Yeah.
That affect it. But on a normal average basis, I would say, you know, after 3 or 4 days, you're going to start to see some signs of, mm-hmm. of some decomposition.
Mm-hmm.
One of the very first signs of decomposition is, most people are familiar with, but they don't really realize that that's what it is, would be rigor mortis.
I was going to say that.
So
that's like the only term I know.
Yeah. Sounds so cool. Rigor mortis.
Rigor mortis. Rigor mortis. Let's say it, Katie.
Rigor mortis.
She is the lunch lady making these sloppy joes.
She sounds like the creepy lunch lady with the mustache.
Oh, come on.
Good talking to the microphone. That's what you sound like.
Oh. Do you want some more cake?
Oh, too much fun.
Oh, I'm afraid I'm caked out. Thanks, though.
Only
you just see it, just vision her with that big old ladle just slopping that stuff on her tray.
That makes me think more of like a prison slopping on their tray than it does a lunch lady.
Talk about lunch ladies and stuff. My kids always come home. Our lunch is
I loved cool. my school lunch.
Yeah, I'm like, you don't realize how good you have it. Like, there's going to come a time where you don't even get lunch anymore.
Right.
So don't complain to me about how your fiestada pizza was cold.
Don't even say a fiestada pizza. I just thought about that today, and I want it so bad.
Barbecued rib patty on a bun.
My mom always made us make lunches when we were kids.
We did too. Getting hot lunch was like a special treat.
Okay, so next question might be a little more, I don't even want to say personal, but more like, but experience wise, like
mm-hmm.
what would you say is worse as far as being the funeral home director, as far as like what kind of person you get, like whether it's a baby or whether it's a kid or.
Yeah. Kids, younger kids, babies, we don't get those very often, thankfully.
No kidding.
But they are tough. Especially like once you have kids. So like, cause you have more of like an emotional like connection. Like before I had kids, you know, I'm like, that's sad. But
mm-hmm.
For me personally, I think the kind of some of the saddest ones are honestly probably like suicides, because that's a situation where it didn't necessarily have to happen. I mean,
sure.
You know, that person's dead because they chose to die or they wanted to die, you know, as opposed to a natural death where you live your life or an accident where, you know.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the suicide ones are probably regretted it before, because I've heard about survivors like jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge and right after they did it, they're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I made a mistake. Well, and because, they lived.
Yeah. The thing is, it's, you know. Assuming that you don't survive, you kill yourself with a gun or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, that's final. You can't, undo it. And I always wonder what goes through a person's mind.
Oh, I think everyone does. I mean, I think there's several scenarios that.
Yeah. Those are that's like, for me, those are the tough ones, because I find myself wondering, what was this person like, as a mm-hmm. person, what were they dealing with at the time, the time that it occurred? And because it's, they wanted to die for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So like for me, those always been like the hard ones, because it's there's just so many emotions involved. And, like from a funeral director perspective, the dynamic is different. The dynamics are completely different. Not always, but almost always when you have, Grandma Betty over here that is 90 years old and lived her life versus somebody that, you know, like your husband that mm-hmm. died because of an accident or whatever, mm-hmm. younger, you know, you think all of the what ifs and stuff. So, the dynamics of how you, you know, interact with that family that you're working with and stuff can be, you know, sometimes things can be a little more, the family can be a little more laid back when they're, when it's their loved one that lived their life versus a tragic death.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it'd be totally different.
Yeah. So, and the other thing, with it is, you know, being a small town funeral director, a lot of times we know the people that we're
right.
working on and the families that we're working with, or if we don't, we know them pretty good afterwards. My best friend, Trevor Vandewall, I got to know him when his mom passed away. You know, it just, we just talked and stuff and became friends
good
and
friends.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'd be lost without that guy. But, so, you know, a lot of the families, or if we don't, you know, it's a familiar face versus just a stranger. And
no, absolutely. In a small town. And that's where it gets hard, even being like, I'm a volunteer EMT myself, and it's hard. And people ask me all the time, like, how do you do that? What are you like, what would you do if you have to go to the scene of an accident when you know it's your loved one or your friend or something like that? And I always say, well, at least I know I'm there. I'm trained. I can jump in and know that everything's
right.
being done that can right. be done. Right. Yep. So
I liked, the phrase that I like that I feel kind of fits me is, if not me, then who, you know,
mm-hmm.
who, if I'm not going to do this for somebody, then who would?
Speaking of phrases, I think Kendra might have told me, do you have a little like slogan?
I know where that's going. Yeah.
I want to
yeah.
hear what this is being so an EMT and back, a funeral home director.
Back in the EMT class, I don't remember how we even came up with this, but my classmates came up with this little slogan called no pulse, no problem, because
you can't fuck up.
Well,
no, he's an EMT and a funeral home director. So, I mean, he's either there to save you, or and if he mm-hmm. can't, he's
people still always think it's like you. A conflict of interest, you know?
Right. Kind of like coincide with each other.
I tell people, I want to save you because then it makes less work for myself
down later. The road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not here drumming up business. I'm actually trying to keep you from becoming business.
Right. That's what it should be. I'm not here to like create business. I'm just trying to keep you.
No, you know, you hear it all the time. You know, they go walk in, you know, lead EMT on the call or whatever. And they look, oh, I'm not ready yet. And so I usually go, well, that's good because you're looking a little lively for what I,
yep. I'm not ready to take you on yet either.
Yeah. So, yeah, they came up with that no pulse, no problem kind of little slogan.
I mean, and that's clever.
So, yeah, it's the EMT class was interesting because I had a lot of background already in it. I've been mm-hmm. running calls for years before I finally had the
bush. Sorry.
It's okay.
I'd been running calls for years and stuff before I finally had the chance to take the class and get my EMT. So that, and then combined with what I do for a living, my knowledge of anatomy and stuff, definitely made taking a class a little easier.
Than for sure. I mean, it would. You'd be a lot more familiar with things.
Mm-hmm. Did you take any classes in like high school or college? Like I said, I took A&P. Did it all come after school?
I had anatomy, I think. Well, had to have been high school. You know, you dissect the little pigs and stuff. You
mm-hmm.
know?
Oh, yeah. The fetal pigs, frogs. And
they
shit.
All smell like pickled eggs.
That's the preservative.
That's the formaldehyde, probably. Mm-hmm.
Is that what it smells like?
Well, that, yes and no. I mean, what you're smelling in that with those is the preservative, but I don't know how to describe. Formaldehyde is one of those smells that like
you're never going to forget.
You know it when you smell it. Yeah. Like I can't describe it to you, but when you smell it, you know that's what it is.
It's just like if you've ever smelled a dead body, you can always smell a dead body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is. That, hey, can I sim off on that?
What's that?
You met my dog that came in here a little bit ago. Did you notice he was totally blind?
No. Which one was it?
The smaller, the white. Well, their names are
the longer haired
Jax,
one.
Jax and Dax.
Yeah. So the story about me getting him is kind of wild in itself, which I can ask more questions about this to you. I think you'll like this. So I was downtown actually, and an EMT call came in. It was around Christmas, and they said, 50-something-year-old man, unresponsive. They weren't really sure what, you know, was wrong. Well, I happened to be, all of this I feel like was meant to be, because I was across the hall or across the road from the hall, the EMT hall, when the call went out. And it was just like I turned around and saw the sirens and I ran across, got in the ambulance, went down to the scene. This guy was living in his camper. He had two bigger dogs, Jax being one of them. And then he had two rat terriers and six puppies. And we had to use a crowbar to get into the camper. And it turns out he had been dead for a couple of days. So if you want to take your mind where what was happening with all of these puppies in there.
I know where this is going.
They were, I mean, they needed a snack.
Right.
At some point.
So did they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that smell, though, right when that door flew open, that smell hit me. But right when the door also flew open, Jax flew out the door as fast as he could and like ran. And so did the other big dog. And then all the other puppies and everything came out. And something about.
I bet he felt terrible, but, you know, he had to live.
Survival, right?
Yeah. I agree 100%, but I bet he's like, I need to go eat a fucking rabbit or something.
I still like to say, like, I don't know if he was actually the one gnawing, if it was,
you know,
how do you know?
I think it's kind of one of those things you don't want to know.
Yeah. So, right. But anyways, I saw this dog fly out the camper and he was like the most beautiful dog I've ever seen in my life. So me and my late husband at the time were renting a house, and I called my what's it called?
Landlord.
Thank you. I couldn't get there for some stupid reason. I called him and
said, mistress.
I called him and said, would you ever consider letting us adopt a dog if we made an outdoor pen and we just make him an outdoor dog? And he okayed it and everything. So
that was nice of you to ask. Most people just do it.
Well, no, I know this, like when I asked to rent this house, he first told me no. And then he said, actually I will, because I know your parents and I know they'll kick your butt before I can, if you do anything bad to it. So I already like knew I had to, you know, utmost respect. Anyways, he said, yes. I called the family. They're like, oh, we think that we're going to adopt it, but we'll let you know. And then they called me a week later and they said, if you can come pick him up before noon, you can have him. And so that whole week though, it was like freezing rain, like so cold. And they had him down in our doggy jail, which is just an outdoor pen with like nothing. And Brett and I had been like driving by every night and like stopping and talking to this dog. And
this is the blind one?
Yes. And he was like loving on us, and he cried for us every night that we stopped. And so when we actually went to get him, he was not blind at the time, we stopped to get him. We pulled up, we unlocked the gate, and he went fucking dashing past us and ran out the gate like without us. And we're like, well, crap, we just let the dog out and we're not going to get the dog now because the dog's going to be gone. And it ran. He ran out and jumped right in the back of our pickup.
Do you have that sound effect on there? Who let the dogs out?
I don't.
We need that one. You do have a dog one. I found it today.
I'll have to get it.
Yeah, there it is.
There you go. There you go.
But yeah, he jumped in the back of our pickup. And
so he wasn't blind then?
No.
So how did he become blind?
Oh, it's a story. It's two stories, actually. First, would you quit it?
I don't hear any more meowing now.
First, Brett and I took him out to where we actually ended up building our house at. And we were just walking around the canyon and he took off after a rabbit and went through the trees and a stick went through his eye.
Oh, really?
That was his first time. And we actually rushed him to the vet, got the stick pulled out, had $1,000 surgery. And then they fixed his eye, quote unquote, and told us he could see again. But we were never really sure if he could. Like his eye was still there, but he just didn't know if he could really see much out of it.
Lights were on, but nobody was home.
Right, right. Yeah. So, but his other one was fine. And then a few years later, I mean, this was a lot of years later, because this was after Brett passed. So, I don't know, 2021 maybe. We were camping, Miles and I were camping in Fremont, and he ran after a squirrel, and a pickup ran over his head.
Really? And he lived?
The only thing wrong with him was it popped out both of his eyes,
ooh,
which was completely awful. And it was in slow motion.
Oh.
And I watched the whole thing, and I was just, no, I can't. Miles rushed him to the vet in Omaha. And this was during COVID, mind you. So he had to wait in the parking lot. They had to come out, like put him on a cart, take him in. They wouldn't let Miles go in the building.
When we were all scared of COVID.
And wouldn't give us any updates until the next day. So for me, I was like, he's dead. I just watched his head get run over. Yeah. What are they going to do for him? He's totally dead. And sure enough, though, we went there the next morning, and I went in there, and obviously it was very like traumatic scene, but I asked him to sit. I asked him to shake. I asked him to do all of his commands that he knows how to do. And he did them all. So then I was like, okay, so what's wrong with him? And they said nothing. It's just, it popped his eyes out. It didn't break anything else. It didn't do anything. So I was like, well, I'm not going to put him down for being blind.
Right. They can adapt so well.
Oh my God. A lot of people don't know. His eyes are completely gone, sewn shut, right? So I actually had a lady say to me, he's got to be able to see something. I was like, I don't think so.
Was her name Karen?
No.
That sounds like a Karen comment.
No, but it was funny.
Wow.
But anyways, back to the main story of that. So this guy was very, very gone and mm-hmm. kind of eaten a little bit. But that smell has never...
That decomposition.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So again, in a situation like that, you take them and put them in a bag and...
Yeah, you would... I mean, they would almost... I can almost guarantee you they're going to be going in a body bag for the ability to get them out of wherever they died. And then, yeah, I just kind of got to assess from there, you know, what we're working with. You know, is there anything that we can do preservation wise, you know,
mm-hmm.
embalming wise? Because the body breaks, you know, as soon as you die, stuff starts happening. It's a slow process at first. But as time goes on, there's, you know, things continue to deteriorate and, sad situation, you know, and you kind of feel bad for the dogs too, that they're put in that situation, but mm-hmm. it wasn't like he did it on purpose. I mean,
no. And for everyone that's ever asked me, once a dog tastes flesh, does it always want flesh? No. And F you all for asking me that.
I've actually never heard that before.
I had a lot of people say that to me.
I mean, it's a question. Like,
fine. So it tastes blood. Is he going to kill me? No. He's like the sweetest dog in the world.
Yeah. They know more than I think what you realize. I don't know. I've only had two dogs. The dog we have right now is only the second one I've ever had.
What kind of dog?
Her name is Dakota, and she is half Pyrenees, half Lab. So both her parents are. You know, her mother was Pyrenees and purebred, and her father was purebred Lab. So she's a bigger dog. But, a dog yesterday, I think I stopped at home for something. And the kids, I don't know if it was yesterday or today. I think it was yesterday. Anyway, I didn't come inside. So I originally got her for my wife, but she's like my dog. And I didn't come inside, and they said that she was like crying, you know, kind of mm-hmm. mopey and stuff. I mean, I'll go home tonight. I'll walk in. Well, she knows the sounds of our trucks.
Mm-hmm. They are smart like that. It's weird.
So like say my wife, because my wife has the exact same truck as me. And it's straight pipe, basically sounds the same. I can maybe say she's coming back from her 50th run to Dollar General of the day and can just maybe just faintly hear it. But I can tell like if she's coming because the Dakota will hear it, you know, she'll perk up and mm-hmm. stuff. But so she knows the sounds of our vehicles. So like I'll pull in and she'll be, our house is one of those where like the front door of the house, like you hardly ever use, you actually go in and out the back door.
Mm-hmm. That's what she said.
She'll wait at the back door for me. She'll just be, you know, just like your kids staring through the window, just, you know, just waiting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's a good dog. And the only other dog I had before that was Toby, who was a black lab. I think he was actually black lab and chow, but I never spent the money to have him a DNA test or whatever. And
dog,
he died.
Dogcestry.com.
Yeah. You know, I'm like, yeah, oh, I got that
thing. No, I just made it up. Oh. Ancestry.com.
You should make it somebody here. Somebody should
this
make
podcast
that
brought to you by
Dogcestry.com. Oh. It sounds more like a horrible.
It sounds like something that like really rich people would pay for.
Dog accessory. Like, yeah, something you'd wear.
I'm so serious. People would look for that. Anyway,
well, yeah, he was a good, he was first and only dog I'd ever had at that time. And he died. Yesterday was our anniversary. He died on the 23rd, 22nd or 23rd. I can't remember.
And did you embalm
just right
him?
Before? No. This was just right before our first wedding anniversary. So that was my wife built a casket for my dog.
Oh my!
And I was just that was like our first anniversary.
It?
Yeah, my wife does a lot of like woodworking. She builds all kinds of stuff.
So that's does impressive. She build your caskets? Because you could make a killing off of
no,
that.
No,
why don't
she
you
does,
start that?
I don't think I want to give her that idea.
I mean, but why?
She's probably going to hear about it now.
But she might.
It's maybe kind of brilliant.
She might.
She could make like custom caskets. Like it's new day.
She builds like furniture. Like she has like a lot of like furniture in their girl.
What's
cave
her name?
And stuff. Kim.
Kim's
Kim.
Caskets.
This is the shout out
Kim's
to my wife.
Caskets.
Kim Schaefer. Ooh, Kim's caskets with a K.
Right.
Kim Schaefing the caskets.
Oh. That's the answer to all our.
I have these ideas. Like I said, when I start drinking, I have great ideas.
Oh, you've been drinking?
No.
A few
White Claws.
that's not really dry. I don't even know. I've never even had a White Claw.
Oh,
what are
man.
They even like?
Amazing.
Are they?
Like I mean, a little bit of sparkling water, a little
they're
bit
not,
of flavor.
They're not as good as she's describing, but they're, you know.
They're my drink of choice.
I know Kendra's a White Claw.
Not anymore.
She switched.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyways, back to our original topic. I got more questions.
Yeah.
How actually can you just like don't make it like a drug out process, but can you explain to me what is a typical cremation process? Like it, and these are the questions I have that like contains to it. Do you burn them when they're in a casket, or are they like, does that person have to pay for a casket?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, they could if they wanted to. They don't have to, though.
Be a lot of extra money, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to buy the casket, I'll sell you whatever wooden casket you want. We'll burn it.
If not, like, so say.
But I've never actually had a family do that. Okay. So what happens is the crematory, we offer cremation services. So your loved one passes away, they say, we're going to have Mama Joe cremated. Okay, we'll do the whole process. We do not have our own crematory though.
Okay.
So we use a crematory in Norfolk, which a lot of area funeral homes
use.
What happens is the crematory requires that the body be fully enclosed in some type of container that is combustible or will burn. So typically, that's going to be like a cardboard type container, or
it's a body size cardboard box.
Yeah, basically. Yep.
And where do you get such boxes? Like, are
from Kel's caskets, or what was it?
Kim's caskets.
Kim's caskets. Pinewood box.
Kim's shaping caskets.
We get them from the crematory. You know,
they send one to you, or you have some.
So
on
like
stock?
When we keep a couple on hand. Yeah. And then if we use it for cremation, like, we bring a new one back with us.
This is an inappropriate question, but again, that's what we're about. Are they like pizza boxes where you just put them up? make them?
I mean, that's
a fair question.
They are folded. Yeah, no, they're rectangular in shape, kind of like the shape of like a casket, like basically.
Long rectangle.
Yeah, long rectangle. So that's what we put them in. Transport the body to the crematory. We have all the paperwork that we
need.
In
the van or in the hearse?
In the van.
The hearse is only for funerals.
Only for funerals.
Got it.
Yep.
Keep shit classy.
Which the hearse is really just a glorified station wagon, basically. I mean,
with rollers in the back instead of
seats. I mean, it's like, I remember the very first time I rode in a hearse. I'm like, oh, this is the coolest thing ever. It's so cool.
Does
the
van not have rollers in it?
No, we have what we call a roller tray, which is a thing with rollers that we put in there.
Got it.
So it's just got a flat floor. We transport them to the crematory, usually in Norfolk. Deliver or drop off the decedent to the crematory personnel.
Deliver the box.
Yep. It's got the body in it. They don't, see the body.
Prime, you get it a day early.
Sorry. But then I have to pay for Prime.
Right.
No, pay for that. No shipping. Cost. No.
You are going to have to pay for shipping on this one.
I was just going to ask that. Like, I want to stem off this so bad, but I'll come to it after you finish the process.
So we deliver their body. They do the cremation. And then we get the cremains back from the crematory when that's done. The actual cremation process of, of burning the body it depends on the size of the person, but on average, 2 or 3 hours is about how long it takes.
And how do they return it to you? Is it in a bag or is it in the thing that the people wanted in?
The urn. It depends on what we need. Usually they give the cremains back to us in a what's called a temporary container. Okay, so
serious question, is it officially called cremains or was that like a play on words?
No, that's a technical term.
I've never heard that. But yeah. Is it
cremated remains?
I don't want to say it's funny, but it was kind of funny.
It's like, it makes perfect sense though.
It does. That's why I was asking. Yeah.
So they give them back to us in a temporary container. So the cremains are in a plastic bag, which is within that temporary container. It's usually just a small kind of shoebox size or a little smaller than shoebox size cardboard or plastic container.
There's those cardboard boxes
again. And then we transfer it into the urn if the family has an urn that they want to use. So the ashes or cremains, or call them cremains, your average person calls them ashes.
Mm-hmm.
They're not ashes like from a campfire. Basically what they are is it's your skeletal remains that are left. So that's
the carbon.
It's your skeleton that's left over after cremation is, all your soft tissues, your skin, your muscles.
It's all been incinerated.
So your skeleton is your bones of your skeleton is what's left over, and it's real brittle and everything, but then they remove it from the cremation chamber and process it. So they'll run a magnet through, pick up any, pieces of metal.
Gold crowns.
So, yeah, gold crown. Actually, I mean, all that stuff's going to be destroyed, but
okay, because they asked me, they're like, do you want his wedding ring or do you want him to be cremated with it? And first I said, just cremate it with him because he never took it off, right?
Yeah.
So, and then last minute decision, I called and said, no, I want it, which... I've worn it every day since I've gotten it, but it would be destroyed. Like you could destroy this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would probably still be.
So would it be within the ashes? Like, could you like dig it out of there or sift it out?
No, they would have, when they're processing the cremains, after they remove it out of the cremation chamber, they run a magnet through to try to remove any pieces of metal like
and
that.
And then what would they do with the gold teeth?
Usually it's not going to be, and like your gold teeth is such a tiny amount.
It's still gold.
That it's not even going to probably wouldn't even be anything there.
That's kind of what I assume too. But
like the ring, for example, would probably still be there. It would be, ruined in terms of it's not going to be shiny and everything like that. I don't know exactly. I think they, they have like a recycling bin that, the metal, various metal things, it could be like hinges or metal parts from a casket or prosthetics.
If they chose from a casket instead of a cardboard box.
That's how the American pawn shop started.
I thought he was being serious at first.
Maybe he was.
He actually might have been. So then they put it into the processor, which basically processes or grinds up the cremains into a coarse sand consistency. Yeah. Yeah. So
typically when, like, as many cremations as you've seen, does the family usually bury them, or do they keep them, or is it kind of half and half?
I'd say it's probably half and half or so. I mean, it comes in spurts, you know. We've have some families that do the burial of the cremains, you know, right away, or, you know, within maybe a few days, as soon as possible. Other ones, they take them and go do something on their own, or, you know, whatever. So it just kind of depends. One of the things is the Catholic Church, years ago, you know, for example, I used to not
believe in it.
Yeah, or they frowned upon it.
I heard that.
Yeah. Now they
talked to you about this.
Mm-hmm. Now they have accepted it, I guess, as a
really
yeah as an acceptable form of disposition.
Wow.
Now the Catholic Church, they're okay with you being cremated. They strongly prefer that
you're not.
That we know that if you are, that the cremains be buried in a cemetery rather than taking them and scattering them, or, you know, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm.
So don't just put them on the back of your motorcycle, duct tape it to your sissy bar, take the top off and floor it.
Yeah. I mean,
that's what I would do.
You do you, but
you want me to have that done for you if you die.
Are you going to ride the motorcycle?
I mean, I'll ride on the back.
That's right. That's where I'm going to sit.
Well, that's where he's going
to
be.
I'll have to hold you in my lap. I can't drive up. Do you want me to be cremated right next to you the next day when I drive the motorcycle and wreck it and die?
It's just a question. Just trying to get shit figured out.
I was just offering my services to help you out to get your death wishes.
I'll figure out something else.
It's Jake Henn.
My dad, to this day, serious thing. He has actually asked mom. He wants a death at sea where he gets
burial at sea,
laid on like a wooden raft.
Oh yeah.
And gets just pushed down the river, and he lets the birds eat him and the fish eat him.
Like some Viking.
That's what he
Pirates wants. Of the Caribbean shit.
And mom's like, yep. I can't do that. I will go to jail.
It's a circle of life.
He wants it. Like,
yeah, you hear all the time, you know, just throw me in a ditch.
I mean, he puts that in his will.
It's, no, it's not legal at all. Think why? About someone maritime finding that. Are you kidding?
We're in Nebraska, so like I said, I can only speak on Nebraska's laws because that's all I'm familiar with.
In no state anywhere is that legal, nor would it be.
Wow.
What are you going to, like, post a sign on the top that says, don't touch me, this is my burial wish to let the birds and the fish eat me? And so then he's still, like, going down this raft, like.
You don't think they'll be gone by the time anyone finds them?
What if he gets snagged on something and this poor fucking little
four-year-old are you talking about the ocean or like him?
The river, like
the Missouri River.
The Loop River.
Oh, that's not a big enough river.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not a legal form of disposition in Nebraska.
You're going to tell your
you're going to have some red flags going up there.
Yeah, that's
like, I get it, and it's 100% my dad, but it's probably can't happen. And the only way we'd
be able to do that, oh, you ass. The only way we'd be able to do that if it was his cremations.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you were to...
This is my father we're talking about.
Have you seen the movie Little Nicky? You ever seen the movie Little Nicky with Adam Sandler?
Oh, yeah.
That's what that reminds me of.
It's hard to take you guys seriously when you're fucking around like this. Are you done, Lunch Lady?
Are you done? You're done.
Yeah.
And you take that many bullets, you are going to be done.
Yeah.
This is like some Omaha stuff.
Oh my God. Yes. It's
so, yeah, if he wants to be cremated and then do that, I mean, he could.
I don't even, I bet there's a law against that even. Because aren't there actually laws about not being able to spread your ashes?
So it depends on where you're spreading them at. In Nebraska, you have your different forms of disposition, which is a fancy way of saying the legal disposal of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So first one being burial, cremation, donation. So it'd be like donating your body to science. Those are all forms of disposition. So in Nebraska, once the body's been cremated, the legal disposition of the body has been carried out. So just the same as it's been legally disposed of, just like if you buried somebody. So what you do with those cremains after that is your choice.
Hmm.
Now, you go scatter them on, you know, your favorite spot on the river or on the family farm or, you know, off Jake's motorcycle. Let me know so I can go around. I ride motorcycles too. Did you know that?
I seen that ring over there, and I was going to ask you about it. But Katie's been keeping us on the dark side.
I told you I had questions.
She's got questions, and I've got answers.
Ask Jeeves. Ask Drew.
What is this, 1997 again? AskJeeves.com.
Is that when that came out?
I don't even know what it is. So you guys are older than
that's
I am.
An old search engine. It was like before Google became Google.
Oh, I kind of know what you mean now.
Mm-hmm.
I would have forgot about it.
Dating ourselves. I forgot about it until now.
Yeah. Well, I remember a lot of useless shit.
That's the problem. That's a problem I've always had. Like, why can't I remember the shit I need to? And
that's why you write it down like I do.
Well, maybe it's not that useful.
Your headphones are on backwards.
Oh, whatever.
Anyway.
I actually check mine all the time now. Self-conscious. I don't want to get made fun of.
Yeah, by this asshole over here.
Oh, come on, guys. It's not that bad.
It is kind of intimidating.
I know, right? Okay, so this one, I don't know that you've actually had a case like this or not, but have you ever actually had to assist with a homicide or a murder case? Because do you do the autopsies?
No.
Okay.
No. I have been present for a couple of autopsies over the years. But no, the autopsies are typically done either, most time they occur in Douglas County in Omaha. Sioux City does them, but we don't have very many autopsies. There's been maybe, I know it wasn't when I was working here in Albion, but it was when I was in Norfolk. There was somebody that was murdering. We'd take him for autopsy, but
I need to know how.
I don't honestly remember. It was like around, I think it was around Christmas time or something. It was a party. Somebody got mad at somebody and they stabbed them or what exactly happened. But, we don't have very many homicides around here, you know, because it's small, you know, small town. I mean, if we did, it would be a big deal.
Yeah. But every single true crime documentary starts with, things don't happen like this around here. This is a small town. You don't hear of things like this.
My wife's going to wonder why I never came home tonight. Jake Ken murdered me. He didn't like my new bibs.
I love no men. I wanted them for myself. Maybe I'll.
That's why I was running a little bit behind. I had a little wardrobe stress because these are brand new. Having stress getting my shoulder straps where I wanted them.
Not quite adjusted, right?
Yeah. I had to adjust mine when I got here tonight, too.
He actually walked around for like 15 minutes before you got here adjusting his straps. So,
yeah.
I stood in my bedroom going, come on, you bastard.
That's what she said.
Mm-hmm. Come on, you bastard.
I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, another question I have going back to the embalming, but when you're draining and putting back in and you know, winterizing the camper, where does the blood get disposed of?
Down the drain into the sewer.
Ew.
Down the drain. You heard it here first. Into the sewer. And then they mix the blood with your poop and pee. And filter it and ship it back to the water tower, and then you drink it. That's recycling for you. That's what they do And
neither one of you should be trusted with the voice changing software.
Silence!
Okay, all right.
That was the most beautiful thing I've seen all day. Silence!
I'm crying.
Too much fun.
No, it really does go down the drain. And that's what throws people off, because they like think, oh, you know, the blood, and it goes down the drain. Like, oh, how can that be? But it's, if you think about it, it's no different than any other bodily waste that goes down the drain. You throw up, well,
pour milk down the drain, sour milk, you know.
Well,
you throw up in the toilet, you flush the toilet. You go to pee or poop or whatever, flush the toilet.
Fine, but hamburger grease does not belong down the drain.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. You know what? Do not pour grease down.
The grease is way different than blood.
But blood or any other coagulates.
I mean,
differently.
But it's.
It doesn't stick to the walls.
How do you know? How it do you know?
Why wouldn't I know? It's just common knowledge.
Pour anything you want down the drain except grease, because then, you know, my wife's like, drain's not working, and I have to like
take care of it. Then women are, sorry, not women, but some people. Some people think that, oh, if you just run hot water, it'll loosen the grease up and then send it down. Well, it'll get further down the line, but then eventually the water's going to cool down to ground temperature, which is what, 56 or something degrees. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to solidify again, and it's going to keep, if you keep doing that, it's going to keep plugging up your drains, and then you're going to have a drain person come back and roto-root it, but you're always still going
to
have.
And guess who's still going to have to pay for that bill?
Yeah.
Give it to the dog.
Oh. Do some. Do
let the dog see it. It'll make their coats nice and shiny.
The grease.
Oh yeah, fuck yeah. The blood. That no, the hog fat.
We're not talking about Jax here.
I know, but we're talking about like hog fat or lard or grease, hamburger grease. Animals love that shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for them. It's good, probably good for their joints and their cartilage and shit.
Don't believe that.
Why do you think my hair is so shiny?
That's gross. So you're drinking the grease?
No, I'm not.
Are you drinking blood?
He licks it. He waits till it, like, you know,
solidifies,
gets hard and turns white again. He just like licks it out of the
grease popsicles.
Oh, my.
Fights the dogs for it.
That's why my hair is so long.
Yeah, it does. This goes down the drain, you know, into the sewer system, just like anything else. Eventually it gets treated.
Yeah.
But that's really like just throws people off. Like what do you do with it? And you don't think twice about going to the bathroom and flushing a toilet, you know, and sending it on.
The reason I think she's getting at is blood's probably a little bit more valuable than piss or shit. And
it's too bad you couldn't donate it after they were
dead. Exactly. But it's probably too,
it's not oxygenated. It's probably it doesn't
too late.
Yeah, no, it's already
expired, like bad milk. Delicious cottage cheese that's you know, that you get out of the milk carton after it sits in there for 2 months. You get cottage cheese, and then
you have milk in your fridge for 2 months. My milk doesn't last 2 days. I love milk.
You love milk?
Oh, I drink the shit out of milk. Oh,
it fucks my guts up so bad.
I drink like half a gallon a day.
Somebody told me that. We'll get into that later.
No, I have a final question before we kind of exit out of this one. For someone that's, let's say, really on a budget, what is the cheapest way to go through a funeral process?
That's a good question. Go missing.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, just not show up.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to just go missing.
That's pretty expensive. We're going to have to find you.
Like, do you have, like, I know you have funeral packages and stuff, but do you have, like, if you had your absolute basic package, what would it be and what does it run around?
The absolute bare minimum would probably be like what is known as a direct cremation.
In the cardboard box.
Yeah.
Got it.
Where, you know, no services.
Hers aren't cardboard. They're woodworking.
That's Kim's caskets with a K.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The like double it. K.
It's getting better. Anyways.
That's, you know, probably going to be one of your least expensive options. But, I mean, with those are the situations that we run into from time to time where families don't have funds to pay for something.
Sure.
They still would like to have, you know, maybe they still want to have a service. So we sit down, we meet with them, find out, you know, what they have to work with, what are their desires. And then we try to find, you know, options for them. One of the things that's occurring, you know, seen several times is like crowdfunding or, you know, what GoFundMe type stuff.
Sure.
Raising money. There's, you know, the option of taking out like a loan. Sometimes people
through the funeral home,
Not through us directly, but we have, you know, some companies that we work with or associate with that do finance things like that, or, you know, going to a bank. Sometimes, you know, like if you're a veteran or a dependent of a veteran, like a spouse, there's some, funding options, you know, for mm-hmm. those people. Worse, you know, the kind of last option would be county assistance, applying where the family applies to the county for financial assistance for, paying for things. In those cases like that, things are, you know, fairly stipulated as far as, you know, we want to give them a Christian burial if that's what they choose, you know, because most people are Christian in our area. But they don't get a whole lot of options, you know, in terms of, you know, a fairly basic casket, you know, kind of the minimum requirement type things.
So if you were to give a range of like the cheapest you could get away with burying someone to the most expensive, what would it be?
I would say low end, probably I'm gonna say 7,000 ish.
I could do it for half.
I'm good for half.
I'm just kidding.
Well, that's a good start though. Top end is basically the sky's the limit. I mean, how much you want to spend. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But on average, most of the time,
like average funeral,
somewhere around 15,000, give or take a couple. You know, there's a lot of variables, mainly the merchandise that's selected by the family.
So what's the difference,
you know, the casket
with just getting cremated and having a casket funeral?
Well, there's basically a lot of it. It depends on how much services are we providing. You know, are we conducting a funeral? Or
revert the question to how much does a casket cost?
That's depends on how fancy you want to get.
Yeah, basically, you know, it's just kind of like a, you know, like range. A car. They range anywhere from, you know, around 1,800 or so up to, I don't even know what, 15,000 maybe.
Holy. And
I mean,
what
of some of the ones that are would be around here.
What range do we think Kim's caskets will be in?
I'm going to have to defer that to her manager.
I feel like she should go like in the mid.
Yeah, mid.
Well, it depends on what they're made out of. But are we allowed to name drop like where you work?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I do know those guys and they do a fantastic job. Like they are so helpful. Dee and Tony and
Levander, right?
Levander Funeral Home.
Yep. Yeah. But I don't think Dee's a Levander, is she?
No.
Okay.
No, just Tony.
But those guys they do such good work and they're super helpful. Like, and I've known Tony for years and he's got that sweet chopper
he still has it.
I think he does too. He's got that sweet chopper with the alligator skin seat.
Yeah.
Man, I love that thing. It's got probably a big 107 SNS engine or something on it. Kind of getting off the topic here, but no, I've known those guys for a while and they do a great job.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. We take it
you all do.
Take it very seriously.
I feel like you're kind of behind the scenes guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
no offense.
I'm directing funerals, you know, I direct funerals and stuff just like they do. It depends on,
I just don't recall seeing you a lot.
And there's, you know, there's times where, I mean, I've been here for 13 years and there's still people that like, oh, we didn't know you worked there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's, we've met a lot of neat people, great people over the years. We take what we do very seriously. You know, we don't cut corners. We pride ourselves on doing, you know, we have a reputation for, we're known for doing good quality work. But we don't take that lightly. And it's something that we pride ourselves in, both the work that we're doing on the deceased individual, as well as the care that we're giving to the families and stuff.
You guys got a lot of like patience, you know, like, cause it's a serious thing that, and dealing with these families.
Yeah.
And the patience, the level of patience you guys have is.
Yeah. I mean, cause
it's incredible. It's awesome.
It can be very taxing. You know, and we work with a wide variety of families, and some are very easy to work with when it comes to arrangements. You know, they're very prepared. You know, whatever you need, you let them know and boom, they get it to you. Makes things really easy. And you have other families that, you know, not that it's necessarily their fault, because there's a lot that's going on when somebody passes away. Mm-hmm. And you can be overcome by your grief, you know, in that you're not focusing on the things that you normally focus on. So, you know, there's a lot of, it's a very demanding job. Both the hours that we work, you know, getting called out during the middle of the night, weekends, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, being able to just say, well, you know, I'm sorry, you know, we'll get them on Monday. No, I mean, a phone rings 3 o'clock in the morning, I get up.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, you know, I remember years ago when my wife and I were first together, I'd get a phone call in the middle of the night, and sometimes she'd be the one waking me up. And, she'd lay awake and stuff the whole time while I was, you know, gone. Cause we'll go and make the removal from the place of death, even in the middle of the night. And then, you know, if we're embalming, we'll do that right away. So, we don't just, wait. I mean, so we'll do those initial cares, like the initial embalming and stuff right away. So now, you know, she's so used to it that the phone can ring. I can answer the phone, turn on the light, take down the information I need to, get dressed, leave. Go do what we got to do. And if there's time, you know, might get to come back home for a while before you have to go back to work. And she might not even know I even left.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. I'm going to end with one more like stupid question, but let's say
just one more.
Yeah. I promise this is it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Let's say you and your wife are home on a Friday night having a movie night. And it's right in the middle of a movie and it's like 9 o'clock and you get a call and you go out and get the body, bring it home, like do your process.
Well, I'm going to take it to the funeral home. I'm not going to bring it to my own personal
home. Oh, so it's a different. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't live at the funeral home.
Jeepers, Katie.
Well, the one in town here, they lived.
I'm just fucking with you.
In it.
Yeah. I mean, some places do.
There's no such thing as a stupid question.
Oh, there's plenty of them. Anyways, back to that question though. Okay, take it to the funeral home, started the embalming process, whatnot. Would you be able to go home and sit back down with your wife and finish your movie and be like unaffected?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
That's just part of
keeping the work at work.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it affects us, but it doesn't. I mean, when we're taking care of somebody, when we're doing that work, I recognize and acknowledge, you know, that it's somebody's loved one and we treat them respectfully and with mm-hmm. dignity and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, on the opposite hand, I'm doing what I do and I don't think about it.
Mm-hmm. Just doing what needs to be done.
Yeah. Yeah. Taking and I mean, I don't want that to sound like cold or anything, but,
it's not.
Yeah.
No.
When I come home and, you know, we go on with our lives and stuff. I mean, my kids are used to it. They come to the funeral home and, you know, help move flowers and stuff occasionally, or, you know, they know there's no secrets. I mean, to what I do.
Okay. So it's really been a pleasure having you on our podcast.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll have to get you back on again.
Yes. Everybody
got time.
Drew Schaefer, number one EMT in Albion, Nebraska. 2024.
Boone County, I think, ain't it?
I don't know. Is it Boone County?
No, it was just Albion. Just the Albion.
I mean, department. That's that's enough. That's yeah, a no, huge
I,
accomplishment.
Yeah, I didn't honestly think that that would be something I would ever get.
I love it though.
That's awesome. I appreciate it though. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So I'm going to play the song that neither one of you could guess.
Can you play it on harmonica one more time?
No, that's not how it works. Although okay. I don't know who the original singer is because there's so many people that have come out and sang this, but you will still know it. So I'm going to sing my favorite singer and it should come across. This as Bluetooth. So here we go. Let's see if you can hear it.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
What is it?
But you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this.
I mean, I feel like I was spot on. And
I'm pretty sure I know where I've heard this song.
Where?
Greatest Showman.
I don't think so.
I'm sure that, because that's like my daughter's favorite movie. I'm sure that they
play it. Hallelujah.
That's what it's called.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Right before he says it.
So many people have sang this.
Maybe that's not where I've heard it, but I've heard it at services, funerals and stuff.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
Might be called Hallelujah.
Should have played Amazing Grace. I'd have got that one.
I thought about it.